Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for debate, discussion, analysis of every Premier League match week and the Champions League as well. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are the topics for today's show. Aubameyang dropped as Arsenal beat Spurs in the North London derby. Sergio Aguero starts as Man City continue to impress. A Craig Dawson own goal is decisive in Man United's win over West Ham. Christian Pulisic gets a rare start for Chelsea in their draw against Leeds. Diogo Jota scores while Rui Patricio goes off due to a head injury. And our thoughts on Chris Wilder leaving Sheffield United by mutual consent. That's what we've got coming up in today's show.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all on its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric never could be. It was built with a driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience the electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, Robbie, a North London derby, always much anticipated, my friend. Kind of headlined, really, right at the start with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Reports saying that he was late to a pre-game meeting, something I guess had happened before, and his manager said, you know what, you can sit on the bench. Maybe we'll get to that towards the end of it, Rob. Should we just go through the game first and to Aubameyang afterwards? No problem for them, mate. They still found a way to win. Arsenal, really, really impressive stuff. Strong start. They go behind to an incredible Eric Lamela goal to make it 1-0. Then Martin Odegaard and Lacazette from the penalty spot makes it 2-1 and a really good and the feel-good factor given the Aubameyang kind of story. We're certainly there at the end of the game.
Yeah, and I think you know there's a conversation about Spurs' tactic. Went back to being passive. The front four, you think, can burn things up if they're given the freedom and they win the ball back. They weren't. It didn't happen from Spurs' point of view. But I think a lot of credit for that has to go to Arsenal, Rob. I thought they got hold of the game, controlled it as much as they could through midfield. I thought through Saka, who came off at half-time with injury, but Pepe came on it and actually kept the levels up on that side. Young Odegaard and Smith Rowe in particular, Rob, three young players, big game, big, difficult opposition, I thought came out with flying colours. I thought down the left-hand side of the pitch, Tierney and Smith Rowe had far too much for Gareth Bale and Matt Doherty, who had a particularly bad game. And I thought considering all that had gone on before the game, and we'll talk about that after, and considering the nature of the game, the form of the two teams, where Spurs were looking to go. I thought it was a really big day, big performance, big win for Arsenal.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree with that. I do. My strongest feelings, Rob, though, are with Tottenham. And, you know, there's been a lot of headlines, of course, afterwards. And I think we were both similar in the disappointment we felt towards the Spurs' performance, the approach. There was one that I read that I thought was very, very strong, but it kind of resonated with me. And I think it was in The Guardian where it said, Jose's fear of football is hurting Spurs. Like, there was a fear to this, that he feared this derby, that he feared getting on the front foot with the players that everybody has seen in great form at Tottenham right now. And the lineup suggested, with previous results, with Gareth Bale starting, that Spurs were going to really go at Arsenal. And we looked at it really closely, and you could tell in minute one that there was a sense of, oh, let's keep our shape, let's drop back, let's be cautious. I could go on and on about it, Rob, but I want to throw it back to you straight away. In some ways, did Jose bottle it?
Well, listen, I think we have to be careful in saying that Jose bottled. Do we know that's the way he set his team out? Listen, he could say.
Well, we saw the people that was involved him. Rob, the team, we saw how strong it was.
I agree, Rob, but what makes me think is Jose Mourinho is a master tactician. He's got a brilliant record throughout competition. And I know we're going on history, and I know you're putting face, but if you're I'm looking at Rob and saying, if I'm Tottenham in the form I'm in, I've got the players I've got, I've got the results I've got, why would you go into that game with fear? Why would you go into that game on the back foot? I cannot believe a man who knows football, who understands football. I mean, he came out, Rob, quite strong, and he didn't want to name individuals and talk to the team, but he said, we had some players hiding, big players hiding. I mean, that's saying that players weren't getting on the ball, weren't doing maybe what he wanted. Now, is that another Jose line? Has he talked about the penalty? Is that a bit of deflection? Are we going down that route? But my big question for Jose Mourinho and Spurs is, if in the state they're in at the time, one of the best front fours in Europe right now in terms of form, if you don't go at an Arsenal team on this day to win a big game, you may as well forget it. You may as well. Why go to the league? Let me tell you, you play in the League Cup against Man City with that attitude, they put five past you.
I mean, particularly given Arsenal's recent performances of trying to play out the back and looking horrible at it and giving goals away. And going back to that right side, Rob, Gareth Bale and Matt Doherty, right? I think we all know what they're both best at. They're both best at getting on the front foot, attacking. Doherty overlapping, getting forward, crossing, trying to assist goals. Bale getting on the ball, long passes, clever play, little dribbling bits, getting the box to score goals. If you're going to have a backward step as your first kind of, just your team's approach, you're inviting the other way around. You're inviting Arsenal to come on. You're inviting Kieran Tierney, who's one of the best attacking fullbacks. And then you're not getting the best out of Gareth Bale, let alone going forward. But he doesn't want to, and he's not anywhere near his best. Put Moussa Sissoko out there if you're going to go and try and block it up, and he's going to give it the old master plan that we've said before. So I just couldn't believe it. He's not utilising the players that he's got very well. When Gareth Bale came off, Rob, right? And again, when a big game happens, right? And, you know, we do our show and we go back to our homes or whatever. It's natural to look around and see what the general feeling out there was. And the general feeling was that Gareth Bale didn't turn up. And, like, this is why he's not been playing and stuff like that. I got to say, I felt for him in this one. And I'd be the first if I felt that he was hiding or he didn't want the ball. I saw, you could see his face when he came off, Rob. It was like, what do you want me to do? I felt for him. And there's, listen, it could have been any players coming off out of the game when he came off. But what do you expect when you're going to be defensive? You're going to be passive. You're going to invite Arsenal to have the ball, have the space, you build up, you play out the back under no pressure and see how it affects us. Not ideal.
The bigger picture becomes then, Rob, and you talked about it, you know, when we look and we try and pick out opinions from other people and see what the general consensus out there.
Yeah.
people are questioning, is Jose going to be able to be that guy in those big moments and those big games? Is he going to be able to be the guy, or is he going to revert back to old Jose style? Yeah. It gets you over the line with certain teams, with certain setups, but with this group of players,
yeah,
it's a big question mark, mate.
Well, it is, and that's basically the crux. That's the crux. It always has been, always will be with this guy, isn't it? It's just the way he does things. I just thought, well, the way that they're going, the way that Arsenal are going, please have a go. Please get on their front foot. But it wasn't, and you're right. That's his go-to. And it goes back to the first question. Is that fear of being on the front foot in big games just going to hold the Spurs back where it wants to? I mean, can you imagine the confidence of Kane right now, of Bale right now, of Lucas right now? You know, Son is...
He got the injury, didn't he, and whatever.
He got the injury and stuff. I was so disappointed in that approach. I wanted to see Arsenal really ask questions physically, tempo-wise, pressing-wise. And yet, those Arsenal players must have been like, oh... You imagine Rob Partey and Xhaka and the fullbacks and Lindegaard, Odegaard. They're like, wow, this is kind of nice. I can understand if Spurs have been and they have been better defensively, but it's been a strong policy or a strategy that's worked really well. He did say it was a really bad performance, which it was. They only started playing, Rob, when there were 10 men towards the end, where they had to, out of desperation.
It was a shame. But no, listen, let's put the credit back to
Yeah, go back to Arsenal, yeah.
It was, you know, Arsenal's day. I thought they played pretty well. Like, say, that left-hand side, I thought Odegaard's influence grew as the game went on. He got an important goal that got them back in the game. Lacazette, I thought, ran the line well, did a good job, and obviously takes his penalty. And fair play to Mikel Arteta, because they continue to play. And you say, whatever the opposition do or don't do, that's down to them. Arsenal did their job well, got 3 points. It was a big, big win in terms of, I just think, in terms of showing Mikel Arteta, showing on big days his team can turn up and put a performance and get a win. They've got to start to show they can do that if they're going to get back to top six, top four, and beyond. Rob, the big story from the North London Derby is the captain, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who, as you say, for disciplinary reasons, was in the team, was late for a pre-match meeting, was taken out of the team, put on the bench, which is an interesting decision by the manager, not totally put to the side. I know you had views on him sitting there, and we had differing views with our own Lee Dixon in terms of how the manager dealt with this. Many people believe that Arteta did the right thing, and then winning, I think Jurgen Klopp said last week, if you win, you're right. And so in that respect, big day for Arteta. He got the result on the pitch, and he made his move off the pitch with his captain. So absolutely no issue with that. And from his point of view, you know, well done, because you've managed both situations. Could it have been handled differently, Rob? What do we think of the future now of Aubameyang, who's an important player, who's his captain, and Arteta moving forward? Because that starts to become the bigger question.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it seems that everybody's happy and people say it's the right thing to do. And the manager looks kind of tough and strong in the dressing room, and the club backed him up with the official announcement pretty quickly. It goes back to Aubameyang and how that relationship might be now. I don't think I've ever seen a player look so miserable, fed up and maybe angry, sat on the sideline there. You've got a shot of him as well in the warm-up before the game, and he wasn't doing a lot. And of course, reports saying that they could hear his Ferrari starting up and speeding out of the Emirates Stadium before the subs, which he probably should have been a part of, were doing a little warm-down session on the pitch. So, listen, I will never think that was the right call. In risk, of course, like, listen, he wins. So... he wins the game, so of course it's fine. But I would have thought there's other ways of dealing with that. You get him in on Monday morning and you say, you know what, this has happened one too many times. Come on, you're my captain. Try and get him. I mean, I'm sure he hasn't changed too much in the last few months. I mean, has he become a bad person or a bad pro in the last kind of couple of months under the new manager? So I think it could have been dealt differently. And now he's going to have a little bit of fallout, maybe. Manager now, he's got to deal with that, and he's kind of smiling face and everything else. Now he's got to deal with a player that does he get stripped of the captaincy? Is he still the captain? I mean, you have really thrown him under the bus, is a strong term, but possibly. How do you think, Rob, that Aubameyang now will react? Is it arm around the shoulder from the manager and everything's okay, or does this linger with the striker?
There's two things that spring to mind. One is about the discipline and the character at Arsenal. Now, some will say he's tried to address this and he's gone strong. And I hear that argument that he's trying to change a culture, that we're moving on from the Wenger and the Emery times, and this is him making a standard. And I absolutely get that. And as important for him is building the culture and the thing that the young players have got something to follow by, that older players can't turn up to meetings when they want. I'm absolutely all over that, Robert. As a pro, that was one thing I prided myself on. But there's also the most important, everything that trumps that is winning football matches. You can have the best culture, the best discipline, the best protocol in your football club, lose too many games, you won't be there to see it out. So there's a balance. Now, come the weekend of the North London Derby, the winner is Mikel Arteta. His team performed and he got the result without Aubameyang. The winner is Arteta. There's a loser in this, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. I think, in my way of handling it, I would have won, but have allowed I wouldn't have lost Aubameyang. You could lose Aubameyang now. I'm talking between now and the end of the season. Yeah. How he plays, how he works. He might put a transfer in. He might decide it's not for him. The manager's not for him. And he wants to go.
And he just done a new contract, Rob, on big, big money.
Do we get down an Ozil situation where somebody's sitting there not really part of it and we're paying him loads of money? I totally get that Arteta has to put his foot down. I'm with him. And I want him to, because that's been a problem. But there's times and ways to do that. And it's interesting because Lee Dixon, our buddy, who's an Arsenal legend, was very strong behind Arteta and said, no one's bigger than the club. And I get that. And it was interesting, Rob, because we had the conversation. And maybe because we, from different parts of the league, we were in teams where we had to fight and struggle to make sure we're in there every year. That if that happens in my team, I want him to play, and then I want him fined, and I want him apologise, and I want him to do all the things, but I want him in my team, Rob, because I want to win. And maybe that's because it was Wimbledon, and we had deficiencies, and so that's
absolutely it. Couldn't agree more. I want the best players in the team.
Maybe at Arsenal it's different because you can have another star, and they got to win, and it happened. So maybe it's where we come from and how you put up. But every Saturday when I look around, especially a big game, I want my best players next to me.
Yeah, we'll see, mate. We'll see how that shakes out. You know, it's just one of those things. But a player that's just signed a new contract and the captain in a North London derby, weakening the team. Wow, that was a big, big call. And of course,
He could hopefully see this out. You know, he could get on side and it come good. And you know, that's brilliant management by Mikel Arteta. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying what I would have done in that situation.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think we can move on from this game, mate, without talking about a certain goal. I think we would be remiss.
It would be remiss.
And I was talking about the Rabona remiss. I mean, so I'm gonna start off right here with.
Oh no.
In the Premier League era, there's a top draw. There's the Rooney overhead kick. There's the halfway line. There's the Di Canio bicycle kick. There's the Bergkamp touch and play round in Newcastle defender. I'm opening that draw, Robbie Musto. And popping in an Eric Lamella Rabona. Right in there. There's not many in there. In the Premier League era, that skill, that improvisation, that curl on the ball, nutmeg of a player, it's in the draw, mate.
I think you might be a bit overreacting.
Come on. In a North London club, come on.
Hey, listen. First of all, of course, it's a brilliant goal. It's a brilliant goal. I mean, the whole. I tell you what. You know, you get certain players that have certain actions. It becomes their logo.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan with the whole
the
kind
back of my where his free kicks
the Beckham thing and everybody. I mean the style, I think it was his left arm that was up in the air.
Yeah.
It was this beautiful, it was like a beautiful shape. And it was a piece of art. It was a piece of art right there.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't, and so I absolutely love it a bit. I don't know whether it deserves to be in that draw.
We're talking
many years of incredible. Yeah. I mean, listen, it was marvelous, unexpected, difficult to go. I get all that. I don't know. I think
it's in my draw, mate. And there isn't that many in there, but it is in my draw. But then I suppose with Eric Lamella, you know, you get that, and then you get two yellow cards in 7 minutes, and he's off the pitch. And you know,
any arguments with the two yellows, Rob?
Absolutely not. And it's part of who Eric Lamella is. He's got this fire in his belly that at times is good. Emotional, and he wants to press and he wants to make things happen, but sometimes Robbie he gets a bit hot headed and goes over the top, and certainly didn't help his team. But no, the Rabona's in there for me, obviously not for Robbie Musto, not the romantic Robbie.
It was great, but levels of greatness we disagree on.
Let's move it on to the title winners, because I am going to label them. I mean, I think they're 14 points away now from winning the next title. Need a maximum 14. That's on everybody else being perfect. Got the job done against a Fulham team that started the game well, contested things well, and then made a couple of errors.
Yeah.
Manchester City going to cost you, and in the end, you make those kind of errors, City are going to punish you, and City get all 3 points. Felt a little bit sorry for Scotty Parker, because generally his team have played well, they've contested, they had a bit of a go at it, and then, you know, bad defensive errors, one following another, and all of a sudden you're out the game, and that little momentum he had going just stops for a moment, and they've got to build it back up again.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't expecting a huge... productive day against Manchester City. You know, I liked the game plan that he set up. Obviously, thought about it. It was a couple of man-to-mans going on. There was people were tracking and filling, and made it in some ways frustrating for Man City. And it just shows you. I think there was 7 changes to the City side, Rob. And you know, when you look at Ferran Torres and Aguero's kind of rusty, but played. Jesus played. Benjamin Mendy was in the team again. There were a lot of changes. They got a massive squad anyway, but a lot of really, really talented players were not there. So I thought they might have had a chance to get a point. Of course, when the first goal goes in, it's very deflating for a team like Fulham. And they weren't as slick. They weren't as good. And Fulham had been confident. And Fulham had a game plan. But then City still run out 3-0 winners. That's where we're at Man City, Rob. Whichever team they put out there, pretty much against most teams in the Premier League, then there's a strong chance that they win the game. And also, when they don't play at their best, you know, the game before on Wednesday, Southampton, they won 5-2, and again, weren't really at their best. Obviously, that's a great sign. But it's just once that first goal's in, it's like, you know, wow, we got to chase a ball again. And they didn't really look like producing attacks for them, did they? Which has been a bit of a problem for them. But City, even though nowhere near their best, without their best players, still comfortably won the match.
Yeah, going to be interesting the next game up on Friday. Fulham hosts Leeds at the Cottage. And obviously a Leeds team we know can fly forward, can make things happen. You can't afford to make defensive mistakes against them. So important for Fulham, you know, maybe even to get a point from there just to keep that momentum going and keep on to the other teams. Just before we move on this one, was this another game of evidence that Sergio Aguero...
you tell me, my friend. You're the Sergio lover. You're the romantic.
He
thinks he can come back and be a key player in the final few games. Anything different?
He can be a key player, because I just think that the end is coming a bit prematurely for me. But we are seeing evidence that maybe, Rob, that this team can win and do better without him. He got his goal in the end, the penalty.
Yeah.
A bit of frustration on one or two things. He needs some games. It's whether Pep's going to believe and trust that he's going to give him those opportunities in matches going on. Listen, if they can get this title won pretty quickly, it might be that they can get him some games and get him in shape for what will be the Champions League, the big one. But I see and hear your argument that, you know, right now he's probably not in the best 11 players that Manchester City got, which is a nice position when you've got Sergio Aguero on. Many teams would love to have him in the background, hopefully getting fit and being somebody who can influence a game, even if it's off the bench.
You know, you say any teams, Rob. I did read a report about Barcelona. like a deal was like almost done, was a report that I read. Of course, we don't know how true that is, and there's a lot of talk and hearsay, etc., out there in the transfer market. But you know, maybe that he's going to be leaving, and Pep knows that, and is not going to really try too hard to get him fit.
Messi there, the two Argentinian forwards that might keep in the club as well.
Yeah, big pals, aren't they?
Yeah. Suarez moving on to Atleti, so maybe that's the way. Yeah. Okay, now let's move on to the other Manchester club, Manchester United, 1-0 winners against West Ham. Let's talk about what happened on the pitch first. Own goal from Craig Dawson, enough to give United the points. Important win for United, Rob. The day when they created one or two chances, but up against a good West Ham team who probably got better as the game went on and had one or two opportunities. But clean sheet for United, another 3 points. And the kind of win, Rob, that I think they're sitting now on 57 points. I think there's a 9-point gap, isn't there, or something, opening up to West Ham. 57-48. Yeah, 9-point gap to West Ham, to top four. So almost looking like top four's almost there. It's touchable. It's like one of those four places, which is a big relief for them going into with FA Cup and Europa League to come.
You know what, Rob? I kind of enjoyed this Man United performance. You know, and I know that it wasn't spectacular, but given how tough West Ham have been and how David Moyes organised his team and changed around a little bit with system and different people to be tough to beat, we know that Man United often struggle against a deep block team that makes it difficult for you. I looked at West Ham early in the game, Rob. I'm seeing a team that looks kind of determined and confident to defend and to frustrate United. And yet, you know, United still win the game. I thought Mason Greenwood, by the way, was lively, was bright in a centre-forward position, getting involved on the ball. You know, it wasn't a scintillating United performance, but I just thought defensively, Maguire, I thought was excellent. Luke Shaw, no need to say anything. He's in a moment of form that is automatic. Really, really good in all aspects of his game. So I thought defensively, in a couple of situations with some awkward attackers in West Ham, they did a good job. I just thought I just kind of liked it. We know that there's a ton of their star players out. I mean, who was? I mean, you didn't know.
Yeah, Cavani.
Cavani was out. Martial was out. Pogba was still out. De Gea, Van der Beek, Mata.
Hey,
it wasn't anywhere near as strong as lineup, but that was a tough game.
I think those are important games, and that's kind of what we want for Manchester United, is that consistency. And you say, I thought Maguire was excellent. Luke Shaw's a given now, just playing at a level. But McTominay for me, Rob. Like Scott McTominay in midfield.
Yeah, I like him.
I think he's a big frame. He's a presence. He can pass the ball. I think he's becoming an important player for Ollie. So a good win for United. Good 3 points. So I'm sure they'll play better and want to play better on some days. But now just looking like they're cementing the place. And I want the drive at United. I want them to finish second. I want them to feel like that's going to be the place. You know, the last two second finishes in the Premier League have gone on to win it the following season. Now, again, I'm not saying that's United, but it means something to be runners-up. Now, a lot of talk what's happened on the pitch. A little bit of conversation off the pitch, Rob, because there's been a little bit of shuffling around of positions between Ollie and the board and Ed Woodward. John Murtagh's now being installed as a football director. And Darren Fletcher, obviously the ex-player and was coach for the last sort of 6 months, I believe, is now being installed as technical director. So from within the football club, they've rewarded people, put them in those key positions that, you know, people like us have been talking about for the last 3 or 4 years, that Manchester United need to modernise and get that system. Happy enough with those moves? Does that tick the box, or were you looking for a little more in terms of experience and maybe people from outside of the football club?
Yeah, personally, I think I would have felt happier with experienced people, particularly in the director of football role. Now, you know, John Murtagh has been there, I think, on the youth side. I think he's been involved with the ladies' side. I know he's been involved in recruitment as well. And, you know, he knows the club. He knows what the manager right now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, is looking for with new players. Darren Fletcher, again, I mean, he's not long finished playing and did a bit of punditry. He's coached the younger teams. He's involved with the first team. So he goes to a technical director role, which I kind of like that, because he's a smart, it seems like he's a smart guy that knows the club. I like it. You might argue that you know, everything's from within and there's all the inexperience. But, you know, it's the way they've gone, Rob. And if it means that, that Ed Woodward is making less football decisions, I'm sure he'll be involved with, of course, the biggest financial decisions of the club. But now it sounds like there's a different structure involved for the recruitment and everything else to support the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So they're all in. They're all in on this, you know, club men, understand the football club, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, everybody else. I think it's probably the guys that he wanted for the most part. Mm. We'll see. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah, I think it is a continuity. It's all people who only know
just
that.
One more. Sorry, Rob. Thing I want to forget before we move on. Just going back to the game. Declan Rice, I can't think of a more ideal signing for Manchester United than Declan Rice in any area. In any area. You talked about drive and what he can bring Man United. He would be perfect in a position that they need. There's four positions. Centre midfield is one position. Declan Rice, for me, would tick all the boxes for what that club needs in that role.
I've got to tell you, Rob, maybe Man City are poor. I could name any of the top five and I think he'd still get in there. I think he's that good. I think he's absolutely that good. And
but what they need, Rob. Yeah.
We're going to have a chance to chat to him this Thursday, by the way. We'll get a chance to interview him. So maybe we can ask him one or two of those questions. And obviously, he's re-signed at West Ham. West Ham will want to build around him. But I'm sure with the way he plays for England, he's a beast in midfield. And you're right. Declan Rice, I think, would be on the radar of many clubs. Maybe even in Europe, Rob. Some of those big clubs in Europe, if he became available.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Okay, let's move it on, my friend, to Leeds 0, Chelsea 0. 12 games unbeaten now for Thomas Tuchel since taking over. Plenty of clean sheets, but the other end of the pitch not quite working. We did get a start for Christian Pulisic in the Chelsea colours, Rob. What do you think of the game? What do you think of Pulisic? What do you think of where we are with Thomas Tuchel?
Well, I think we know where we're at. I think defensively now, really, really good. Really good credit to the manager for one part of a team performance that you kind of know what you're going to get now. And that was not a given with this club under the previous manager. You've got Andrea Christensen that's been in and out under previous managers. Azpilicueta that's getting older a little bit now, playing in a slightly different role for him. So defensively, ticks the box. Well done. Now, we know that the changes and the tweaks have been in the wing-backs and the front three. Midfield two was Kante and Jorginho. Again, an area that those players, Kovacic, didn't start the game. Mm-hmm. I personally like two players in that position, the sixth position or whatever you want to call it. The two side-by-side midfield generals, I like that. It's just, well, a couple of things. So Christian Pulisic, first of all, of course it was time for him to get a start, but he started as a right wing-back. Now, he had a slightly less responsibility out of possession. He didn't have to go all the way back, but generally in possession, he was asked to be really wide and work up and down the flanks. Now, he can do that, and there's a few moments in the first 20 minutes where he got past his fullback and got a couple of low crosses in. But I would think, Rob, that he would be frustrated, wouldn't he, with not playing in one of the front three positions. It's more of the attacking role. That's a little bit more licensed to stay high and be creative. Did okay, but Do you think he would be frustrated with that role?
I would say in the way that Tuchel wants to play is that, as with Hudson-Odoi, if you can play from halfway line forward, you still might be able to get the best. And if that's a way to get in the team, Rob, right now, I wouldn't be picking and choosing. I'd be saying, yeah, I'll play there. I'll show my pace. I'll play some balls in. Of course, he would like to be further in field, but it's not like those wide players have to stay right out there. So I get what you're saying, and it probably isn't his best look. But right now, where he's at, if you're in the team, play well, say you're happy, stick in the team, and then some point down the road, say, I quite like one of those 10 positions.
But I just wonder, Rob, if there's a better chance of him staying in a team, playing in a different role. Do you think he stays in that position when Reece James and even Hudson-Odoi have played before him in that role and maybe more suited to that position?
I hear your point, but what we have seen with Tuchel, there's lots of rotations. Ideally, listen, I think play well in those positions, wait for your turn in the 10, and when you get in the 10, the one thing that keeps him in the team if he plays as a 10, Rob, is goals.
Yeah, and productivity.
The thing is goals. If he plays well and get a few goals from that position and you'll stay in that team. Because at the moment, the front three, despite playing well, you're not guaranteed where the goals are going to come from.
Do you think there was quite a lot of reaction, I noticed, Rob, after the game about Kai Havertz and, you know, a Chelsea missing a striker? Should they be playing a striker? Should they be playing a Werner up front? Or a Tammy? I think Tammy was actually injured. Or Olivier Giroud? You know, I mean, personally, I like Kai Havertz. I thought he was excellent against Everton. It would be something that I'd want to stick with for a few games to see if he can get that understanding. Is it going to continue to rotate, Rob, as a manager, till he finds his best bits? Or is it always going to be a little bit of rotation? And is that ideal?
It's a good question. But I think Pep Guardiola has told us to be open-minded. He's shown us how, with the false nine, you can still be as dangerous as you still score 4 or 5 goals. Chelsea aren't there yet. I think the manager has between now and the end of the season to figure that out. I think he can play Havertz and who's looked reasonable and looked quite dangerous. The goals haven't come. He's got enough games now, the Champions League. And then we get to the summer and he can make a call. You know, how much am I going to pay for a number nine? Is the right number nine available? Or do I say, so I think people are on inverted commas trial, Rob. And I think every time you get a chance in this team, you've got to make the most of it because the manager's making decisions on personnel and on the way that the team are going to play.
Yeah, Tuchel makes a good point. I mean, Havertz is playing as a 9 or a 9.5, as he describes it. He likes him up high. He likes him running in behind. He likes him dropping into areas when he feels the time is right. He's not a false 9 as such where he's going to wander all over the place. He'll come away from that line when he needs to. I was a little disappointed because I was so excited the way that he played against Everton.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite the same, but he's going to need a little bit of time there. But I think you make a good shout there, Rob, where let's have a look at everybody. And then in the summer, there's some big time players that could be available and they'll see how much they need maybe one of those guys.
Okay, my friend, let's move it on to Molyneux. Wolverhampton Wanderers v Liverpool. Wolves 0, Liverpool 1, I say. The former player comes back to haunt them, Diogo Jota, who we both talked about at the beginning of the game as a player who Wolves have missed. Liverpool have missed through injury since he's gone, but came back, brought a bit of freshness, brought a bit of life, got the goal. We have to talk about Rui Patricio, who was a collision with Connor Cody, went down. We believe after the game we heard that he was conscious, he was able to talk and knew about the incident. So fingers crossed everything's okay with him because it did look one of those horror moments at a club where Raul Jimenez, as we know, had a fractured skull in that game against Arsenal back in November. So I wish he'd go to Rui Patricio first and foremost. The health of a player is always paramount. But the game itself, Rob, was where we are. I think I call them the 2021 version of Liverpool where they are right now. It's not as thrilling. They're not going to put 2 and 3 and 4 past people in the manner that we've seen in the past. And Jurgen Klopp had a lovely phrase. It was 3 dirty points, but good dirty points.
Yeah, I think at this point, it is about that. And, you know, as the gradual decline happened before our eyes, then it's probably going to take a long time for them to get anywhere near what they were before. And of course, to really get back, they need Virgil van Dijk back in the side. I still was disappointed though, Rob. I still, given that team and the two young centre-backs that I think we all agree had a really good game, really good game, helped, I thought, by Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson at times really playing a little more narrow, a little closer, a little bit more defensive-minded than they normally would. But I thought that was really important, and I thought they both did a great job. But when you look ahead of that, Rob, Fabinho, Thiago, Wijnaldum, Salah, Jota, Sadio Mane, against Wolves that often sit back, I'm like, go on then. Like, that's kind of a nice kind of blended front six. And yet it still didn't really get going with Thiago. I mean, I don't know whether he's better being really behind the ball deep where he can play make. He had this little advanced role. He's struggling to, I think, the intensity, the pace and the physicality of the league a little bit. He's given fouls away, maybe out of frustration, got a yellow card, got pulled off. And Wijnaldum was quiet. So the midfield, Rob, disappointed me before we even get to the front three. I just expected more. Fabinho, great. And in back in midfield, yeah, looks like is the way to go. But the others just were a bit off.
Yeah, I thought the energy from Wijnaldum wasn't really there, the intensity. Thiago, as you say, can't find his game at the moment, can't quite find his passing range. And as you say, the more advanced he gets, I think the less productive. But if he's going to sit in the holding room, he's got to be more athletic to get across and deal with changes. So there's a little bit of sorting out to do there. And I still think he's a good player. I still think he'll be a good option when Liverpool get firing. We talk about the front end. I know you were particularly... I want to talk about the freshness that Diogo Jota gives them, and that could be the spark between the other two. I know Firmino's out at the moment and not been playing well. It might be, you know, he's got a bit of a knee injury. It might be timely that, you know, I was saying to you, Jota could play in any of those three positions and just freshen things up for Liverpool.
Yeah.
He did, you know, a central role today. Scored from the left-hand side. All three were involved in the goal. Probably the only time they all ever... Yeah. Connected on that level. But I know you were a bit disappointed with Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. Sadio Mane just looks like the sharpness is gone. Mo Salah looks, there was a bit of disinterest today for Mo Salah.
Yeah, I think Mane obviously is lost his sharpness in confidence as well around the goal. Had a couple of really good chances where, I mean, he's through one-on-one and the goalkeeper who does a good job of forcing him wide, but you still expect him to score that. But at least you see him. His mentality is trying to do the right things and get back on track. It's just not quite happening. With Mo Salah, Rob, and this might be a little bit harsh, right? And I just want to get your take on it as well. I watched him and we looked, checked with our stats guys, the game's going on, and he had the fewest touches of any player. And I kind of watched him quite closely for a while. And a lot of his movements is about, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's always about going forward. It's always about making runs through the centre. It's always about trying to be in goal-scoring positions, okay? We know he's got 17 goals. We know he leads the charts. We know he's hungry for goals. I just think in different situations in games, Rob, do you need one of your front players to be involved more and maybe to be a little bit less, just to be, not that he's not being super selfish, but help the team in its attempts to try and create in that final third and not just be about, boom, where's the goal? I want to get forward. Give me the ball, make it running by. Like, just try and help in the build-up play, if you like.
I hear you, but I don't think he's that guy. And I think when he was scoring the goals sort of
probably 10, doing the same
17,
thing.
He was doing the same thing. The team's gone off. Firmino's not been as good. Mane tends to give you a bit more of that. We'll work back. We'll link it on. And I think Mo's Mo, and I think you've got to accept that. At times, you pull you out because he doesn't really give you any awful lot more. But he's got 17 goals, Rob, and he'll get you the goals that win you games. I think some days you have to go, you know, that's who he is. We'll live with him and we'll fit the other pieces. Just want to go back to a question I asked you after the game. And I just wonder, you know, your thoughts here on the podcast in terms of Fabinho back in midfield. We saw it against Leipzig, saw it today. I mean, of the three midfield players, he was the one who was winning the ball and still gives you so much, tactically reads the game. And I think it helps shield, in fairness to Danny Higginbottom, who said he would always play him there because he helps. I just wonder as well, and I remember asking the question about, wasn't Kabak and Nat Phillips playing as a two young centre-backs? Can that sometimes help? I'm just thinking, Rob, back in the day when I was playing against playing with a really experienced midfield player next to me in the team, I used to be as nervous about him as I was about the game, that I want to help do things him, and I want him to give me pat on the back and say, well done, and all those things. When Nat Phillips or Ozan Kabak's playing with a Fabinho or a Henderson, there's a little bit more pressure in there because you now got like a stalwart, a veteran, a first-team guy who's in there. And I always feel like as a youngster, it could put a little bit more pressure on you.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point and something that, that maybe people might not have heard before too much, Rob, but I agree. I absolutely agree. And I tell you what it's like, and I have a personal experience as well in it. It's like you look across and you see another young player and you're like, come on, you know, nobody expects that much of us. Let's do a job here. It's a bit more, I don't know, there's, like you said, there's less pressure of, oh, I can't do anything wrong, and more of, let's show everybody. Yeah. And it was the same with me, Rob. I played with a young player at the time, back in the 90s, a player called Jamie Pollock. Young midfield player. I was fairly young myself, and we got promoted into the Premier League. And we were like, nobody knows us. Nobody cares about who we are. And we were fired up to run people down and to do a good job in the middle of the park. And I've got to say, it was probably the most enjoyable player that I played with as a partner. And I played with some international players later in my career, big names, but I love that moment in time where me and him were like, nobody knows us in this league. We're playing against Incy and Robson and I think that's probably just before Roy Keane, but a bunch of big names, and we embraced it and loved it. And it's the same thing where, you know, come on, let's show everybody how good we are. And there might be something in that. All I would say on this, Rob, and Danny did say that he preferred him in the midfield, and today it worked. I want a little bit more body of evidence, body of work that is less risky
from the back or from midfield.
From the back. Yeah, there was a couple of moments where Wolves got a few looks. I don't know. I mean, generally they were part of the good news today.
Yeah,
Kabak and Phillips were part of the good news and helped out with the fullback. So right now that would be the way to go. I just, you know, before. Let's see the next couple of three games if they can be defensively straight. And by the way, it seems like they're getting stronger by more minutes they're getting, which you'd expect. But absolutely right. Maybe Jurgen Klopp now feels it's the right time to move Fabinho into midfield and trust those two at the back, the younger ones. Yeah, really good.
You forget, the better they are. Let's move on to final game of the week for us. Leicester 5, Sheffield United 0. Obviously, we heard the departure of Chris Wilder as Sheffield United manager. That came as, I think, surprise to us all when it happened. And we know there's been rumblings in the background, but I think we're still surprised. So all thoughts were on Sheffield United. Paul Heckingbottom, I think the under-23 coach, was put in charge with 24 hours to put the team out. I think we're all looking at the game, seeing as a reaction, what kind of Sheffield United will it be without Chris Wilder? Not a good response.
I tell you, Rob. You know what? Like, in some ways, it's frustrating when you see a kind of unique situation, and we saw this. So just compare it to Norwich City. Norwich City last season were in their way. They were trying to do it their way. It came pretty clear that wasn't going to be good enough, and the level wasn't going to be good enough. But the belief was there. The trust was there with the manager and the team, and they went down doing the same things, like Sheffield United were a few weeks ago, still trying to do the right things. And now, the last time I checked, 10 points clear in Norwich. With the whole group sticking together, they're going to come back to the Premier League. It's always a risk that the record that they're at, and sit at the bottom of the table, that the ownership want to make changes. In this situation, and by the way, probably, you know, there's many occasions where that's the right thing to do, but not this one. Not this one. This would have been a Burnley with Sean Dyche, a Norwich City with Daniel Farke. You know, there isn't that much wrong. You don't need to go in there and blow it all up and disagree and talk about, because this has been going on for a while, Rob. Chris Wilder's been talking about frustrations with the ownership for a while. And as soon as you start to hear that, it's like, you don't need to do that. This is obviously, it's a bad season. Obviously, the money wasn't spent well. But if you keep everything in place, you got a great chance of getting promoted. 5-0. Players almost look like they've thrown up the white flag and were given up a little bit. Who knows who's going to be managing next season? Who knows what the state of the condition is going to be? And so that uncertainty and that wanting to go in there and fix things and change something that weren't that wrong is going to make it really hard for this team to recover and come back up again.
I mean, the stats follow what you say, Robin, that, you know, Chris Wilder seems never lost 5 in the Premier League. I don't think he's lost 5 since he's taken over, or very rarely. I mean, they've been odd goal defeats. His team defend, his team give everything. Times they've not created enough goals, created enough chances, scored enough goals. But, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, is the thing. It makes absolutely no sense. Now, the only thing I would, the only way, and I'm not saying this does make sense or in any way makes up for the decision, I'm thinking to myself, if I'm in charge of Sheffield United, I want to get my target in now, Rob. I want to get him in now with a few games left so we can find out about players, so we can listen, we're going down, so we know that, but I want to know about the players and I want to learn a little bit. I want to make some decisions. So when I come to the summer, I'm prepared for what I'm going to do in the Championship. They might not get anybody until July. So you have 3 weeks of training, then you're ready to go in the Championship.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Rob, but isn't it always harder to try and pull somebody out of a job they're already in before the end of the season?
If that's who you're looking for, if you're thinking about taking, but these good people who are out of work who might look at it. I don't know whether Eddie Howe might go, come on, Eddie, make us play a little bit. It's a big team. I'm going to keep all these players. I'll give you a little bit of money and I want you to bring us up. Because if Eddie Howe brings you up, he can keep you in the league and he could get to work straight away.
Frank Lampard?
I'm not saying a Frank Lampard, exactly the same kind of player. Come on, Frank. You know, it's sizable. It's on par with Derby. It's got good resources. It's got an owner who's got some money. You know, all I'm saying is use this time if you're Sheffield United. Don't waste this time. Use this time now to get yourself prepared for a Championship season where you're going to come up.
But, we've got to talk Leicester City, Rob. Leicester City not going away, my friend.
No.
Talk about Leicester.
Rewind on our podcast. Top four for me, mate. I just think there's lessons learned. I think there's a proper coach. I've got to talk and I'm going straight to him. I'm going to introduce you, Mr. Musto. Out of the shadow of Jamie Vardy, Kelechi Iheanacho, my underappreciated player of the week. I mean, over the last couple of weeks, he's nicked a couple of goals. A hat-trick, first ever Premier League hat-trick against Sheffield United. Vardy's obviously involved. The two playing together, people were wondering whether they could.
Well, I think we talked about it, Rob, didn't we? Did we talk about it on our last show? Where was it short that Vardy was a partner?
Okay. Working out to be right. He looks happy enough. I've got to tell you, I think we were talking about it earlier this morning. If you get a chance, any of our viewers or listeners, to hear the Kelechi Iheanacho after game press conference when he's got the match ball and he's talking about his hat trick, it'll tell you everything about a guy. Who appreciates everything about football, and it means so much to him, and it's given me a different view of the player now, and I so want to keep playing well because he could be a big part of this team, Rob, and with a coach like Brendan Rodgers, he can improve. And at some point, Jamie Vardy's not going to be running around at 30. I think he's 34 years of age now, the same years. But if those two can work together, he could save millions of dollars to Leicester. Give him a great option. I mean, he was at Manchester City, you know, so he's got to have the quality that people have seen. He's lost a bit of confidence and he probably wasn't feeling he's the guy, but wow, what a sort of last month he's had. And good time for him to just peak and take a little bit of pressure. Five goals scored against Sheffield United and Jamie Vardy, none of them. Is it kind of a good thing for Leicester?
Yeah, I'll just follow up real quick on that, Rob, because you're absolutely right. And maybe some players, you know, the penny drops a little later or whatever. We haven't seen this kind of form and confidence from this player for a long, long period of time. And just back to the interview, Rob, it was just like the wealth of football, the fame of football just melted away. This could have been some kid playing at U14 level, just scored his first goal with a ball under his arm. It was that excitement, emotion, dedicated the hat-trick to all mothers for Mother's Day, talked about how he's trying to improve as a player. It was fantastic. And we should maybe try and get it, Rob, and the two Robbies' Twitter feed.
We'll do it.
Be happy for him. And Leicester, I just thought that Vardy got back quick from his injury. I just didn't think they could contain it under pressure. I thought Liverpool would have bounced back quicker than what they have. Chelsea, I thought, would get there, which they probably were. I think it's just Liverpool. Leicester looks like, for me, they're going to replace Liverpool in that top four. But absolutely right. I mean, tremendous job from Brendan Rodgers and also in a tough kind of a little period of tough run with some results. They're back on track and they've got a new scorer. When others have been injured. So well done, Leicester.
Tell you what as well, mate. Next Sunday, they've got a big game against Manchester United in the FA Cup quarterfinals that I think they can look forward to. And it's a dangerous game for Manchester United. Leicester City play the quarterfinals, the FA Cup. So things going well for Brendan and Leicester and Kelechi Iheanacho. Well done, sir, for the goal. Let's finally round it up, mate, talking about Everton 1, Burnley 2. Not sure I saw this one coming. I know you've got some Burnley love going on. I think Burnley are your new Barcelona. Really?
Burnalona. Yeah.
Burnalona.
I mean, you saw the first. Did you? Is this one? Yeah. You weren't in the studio, were you, for this game? Did you? No. Is this one you watched closely at home?
I watched the game at home, yeah.
I mean, the first half performance from Burnley had me like, wow. I ain't sure I've knew they had this side of them. They ping the ball around. They close down and pressurize, which we've seen before. But I think with the way that they were moving the ball, they were like were infused by that. They're knocking it. They're winning the ball back. They're creating chances. They're hitting the post. And then, my friend, we see a goal that would grace a goal at the Nou Camp or any Barcelona player in the past. My underappreciated performer of the week is Dwight McNeil, a player that we have talked about. And I think, to be fair, that we've kind of appreciated this guy. I certainly have. But maybe others don't know him so much. I think he's only 21 years of age in a Burnley squad that, to be fair, hasn't got a ton of natural ability and raw talent. Dwight McNeil has. And the goal that he scored, and it's maybe a discussion for another day, Rob, with your Lamella Rabona.
The top four.
He's in the conversation for goal of the season with his face coming inside and floating and bending that ball into that very top corner. I thought it was a stunning goal, absolutely a stunning goal from a player that deserves a bit of recognition, a bit of appreciation. So I'm chucking him into as my underappreciated performer, Dwight McNeil, and Burnley for a scintillating performance, a very impressive win at Everton. I guess Everton, I'm sure the fans are frustrated with what they've done at Goodison Park, but it's a time and a little moment on this podcast to give Burnley, Dwight McNeil, some real appreciation, because I've got to be honest, I thought that they would struggle this year with no signings pretty much, a lot of injuries, but again, grinding, great pros, and a little bit of special quality in this game.
Yeah, you know I'm all in for Sean Dyche and Sean we trust, and they've got little players. And McNeil's one of those players who every week we kind of, when we're doing team tea, he can be the little bit of difference. He can bring a bit of quality. And sometimes he doesn't quite deliver. And I think we forget he's still in 21 years of age. He's got so much ahead of him. He's got that little bit of sort of lovely left foot. And as you say, it was a great goal. It ain't getting near the top draw of Premier League ever. I mean,
I get the draw, but it's going to be the shout for goal of the season.
Yeah, the lower shouts, but I'll give you that. But yeah, I'm all in with you with a bit of Burnley love and a bit of McNeil love. Can't go wrong with that. A couple of other results, my friend. Crystal Palace 1, West Brom 0. Penalty Milivojevic was enough to give all 3 points to Palace, and looks like Big Sam's got it all on, mate, to keep that record of never taking a team down.
Yeah.
Southampton 1, Brighton 2. Massive result for Brighton. Come back to win that one. I've got themselves ahead and you know, just the 3 points they needed just to give a bit of a daylight between them and Fulham. And then Newcastle 1, Aston Villa 1. Newcastle, I suppose, will be pleased with the point in the end of Lascelles' late equaliser from, I think, the own goal that came from the Watkins header for Villa. But the point for Newcastle, I suppose, at this point of the season is important for Steve Bruce and his men. And Saturday, my friend, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Brighton face Newcastle in a huge game down at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, I just wonder what team Steve Bruce picks. I mean, this game against Villa, I thought was screaming out for Andy Carroll a lot sooner than he came on. He came on and was a bit of a nuisance. I just, you know, they got to start winning some games, Newcastle, and you're absolutely right. That's a massive, massive game. And I think maybe, you know, in future episodes of our podcast, Rob, we've got to focus, maybe look a little bit closer at these games and talk a little bit more, because it's really starting to heat up now. You know, we know who's going to win the Premier League. We know who's going to, you know, good idea, the top four, but down there still, is still going to be up for grabs. Very, very interesting.
Okay, my friend, it's time to go to our odds, our partners, PointsBet Sportsbooks, latest odds for the top four spots in the Premier League. In the Premier League. So obviously everybody thinks Man City there. So in order, Manchester United -2,000.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Chelsea -278. Leicester City -278. So strong feeling for Manchester United to get there. Liverpool +270. So +270 for Liverpool.
Yeah.
+450 for Spurs. +450 for West Ham. So Spurs and West Ham, same. +1600 for Everton. And +2200 for Arsenal. So not much odds on Manchester United. Clear favourites at -2000 to be top four now with that win. Like the, obviously, the. It gives them things. -278 Chelsea, -278 Leicester. So there's a feel that Leicester will hang in there, Rob, and with Chelsea as the other team. And then Liverpool have got work to do, +270. Spurs Real starting to be outside at +450 and West Ham at +450, which is interesting, both those two. And then Everton, Real outside at +1600 and Arsenal +2200. So feelings on there, mate.
Well, I think if I'm just going to have a bit of a punt, a bit of a gamble, and just risk it just a few dollars, given those odds, you know where I'm putting my money, Mr. Earl? Just a few dollars. Everton +1600. Not many dollars. They've got a game in hand. They can get to 49 points.
49.
With that game in hand, just 2 points behind Chelsea. Again, what you're seeing on the field of play right now, that's why I guess odds are so big.
Win against Burnley would have been interesting. What those odds for Everton would have been, wouldn't it? You know, 3 points, and you know, because there were six behind with two games in hand.
Spurs and Tottenham. If Tottenham would have shown up, and won that game, you know, now they're looking, and I kind of agree.
United in such a comfortable position. Yeah. I suppose there's a little chase on for Chelsea and Leicester. Still got a bit of work to do, but Liverpool at +270, mate. What? Any thoughts? I might have a crafty dollar on Liverpool.
Not bad. Crafty,
can it just start to get a little bit better? Can't get much worse.
No, and they were better, but still, God blimey, still a long way short of what you might expect. But hey, you never know. They got 3 weeks off now, Rob, haven't they? Liverpool.
Yeah, 3 weeks off.
3 weeks off on the FA Cup and an international break.
Then it's a big push from there on into the end of the season, my friend. But that's it for match week 28. We're sitting now a maximum 14 points away from a title. And in the North London derby, Aubameyang was dropped, but Arsenal picked up all 3 points against the local rivals. We'll be back on Thursday, March the 18th, to review a big week in Europe when Man City go against Gladbach, when Chelsea go against Atleti, and in the Europa League, United, Spurs and Arsenal have important second legs to play. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musto, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.